Technorama episode 716 for July 5th, 2023. The heavy lifting is over. Hello and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us for the first time, thank you. Welcome. And if you're joining us for more than the first time, let's see, if join count greater than one, then welcome back. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Chuck Tomasi, output dollar sign name here.
Okay.
My mind has suddenly gone into code. I don't know what language it is either. That's the scary part. And joining me as always from across that virtual table is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Dollar sign equals new host underscore, you know, class, you know.
Get.
And then we're going to call the intro function. Hey, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Call the get function for and pass it a parameter of new host.
New host. Add host. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. A little discombobulated, but only because this whole last week, my routine, you know, it's been kind of upended a little bit. So just things, nothing bad. Just, you know, it's just not working in the places I'm used to and things just being a little different, you know, that kind of stuff.
Were you trying to do your regular job from the mountain house?
I was. Yeah. Actually, I was doing pretty well. The only problem is I don't have a desk per se. So it's, you know, to sit down and have everything already set up like I'm used to. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The other thing is we were getting new siding on the house. So there's a lot of banging, saws, all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know, and there's, hey, Craig, there was a water pipe that broke, you know, come down and see if you can turn off this water. So I got to stop what I'm doing, go do that. Whew. Yeah.
First world problems.
I won't disagree with that. I'm just saying it just throws me off, you know?
Yeah. You should have taken some PTO is what it sounds like.
Well, a lot of it was unexpected. Let's put it that way. Well,
siding's not unexpected.
No. I'm talking about the whole work thing and then people calling me, asking me stuff. It's a long story. You'd have to be there, but I probably should have at least a couple days, but.
Well, if you tell yourself someday I'll laugh about it, don't waste time. Laugh about it now.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it works out. Actually, I was able to work. That wasn't a problem. It's just that I'm used to a monitor and my laptop. I know, like you said, first world problems, but then I'm like only looking at the small screen, doing things I'm supposed to be doing.
Looking at the small screen.
I know.
All right, Scott Tyler says, what's new, Craig?
What? What's new, Craig?
Scott didn't get to church today. For the second time, he gave us like a flask of limoncello quite a while ago.
Oh,
and we finished it up, and I keep giving him his bottle back, but he never shows up to church, so I've been taking this empty flask to church in my bag.
Yeah.
I feel really guilty reaching in like, oop, that, maybe that's not even supposed to be in church.
Communion? No.
Yeah. How about topping me off there, Pastor?
Yeah, I'm going to give Scott Tyler some props. I had that limoncello, and it was fantastic.
It was good.
I don't know what he does, what pixie dust he sprinkles over that bottle, but it was good.
Everclear.
Was really good. Yeah. I don't know what's really new with me, but the siding on my house. You know, the really cool thing about the mountain house is that over the years that we didn't own it, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens under the cover, so to speak. There's a lot of wood that's got wet and rotted over the years.
Yes.
And so when they removed all that siding, they replaced a lot of that wood. So now, as everything's kind of taken care of from the outside, it's like you don't really wonder about that anymore because it's not a problem anymore. So
good.
It's a good feeling. Yeah, it's a good feeling that I feel like there's no super mystery, you know, that's floating around that you think is going to bite you in the butt at some point.
So you can sleep at night.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can sleep at night. And it's going to help out with some other stuff. But it's fantastic. It feels really good.
Should we do our question of the week feedback?
Yes.
Let's get started on the show.
Letters. Oh, we get letters.
Oh, yeah.
We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters.
Reach right out and hear the latency.
Oh, boy.
Alrighty, last week we asked you, what is one movie that everyone should see at least once in their lifetime? And we got a plethora of answers, a cornucopia of answers. Brian Parker said, The Troll Hunter, coming soon to a festival theater and streaming service near you.
Yeah. Now, if you remember, Brian Parker is one of the gentlemen we met at Dragon Con when we were doing MIB.
Yes.
In the parade and everything.
Yes.
This, if I'm not mistaken, is a movie he wrote and directed.
Oh, self-promotion. Very nice.
So I was like, oh, I'm excited about that. I'm not sure. I think that's the name of the movie. So,
all right.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Okie doke. Fritz Ulrich Seward says, only one? There are so many great and good movies.
That's why I made it hard to say one movie, but that's okay. I know people had to put in more than one.
So he put down several of them. He put down Dr. Strangelove. Steve London said Idiocracy.
Yeah.
We're slowly getting there.
Yeah.
Fritz came back with Casablanca, Gattaca, and 2001.
I haven't seen Gattaca.
I got to go back and see it again. It's been a long time. It's probably been 20
years. Ethan Hawke movie, right?
I think so. It's the one where Gattaca is the four letters of your DNA, G-E-T-A-C. And
right.
It was all about DNA.
I'm referring to the film.
Yes.
I know what you mean. But I think it's the movie with Ethan Hawke in it. I remember seeing it in the video stores a million times. Yeah.
Let's see. We also have Mike says Princess Bride, the original Godzilla, Man from Snowy River, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, to show why quality is important in filmmaking. That was parenthetical.
Yeah.
Moon. Right. I agree. Moon was a good movie. Some movies move different people in different ways. It kind of depends on the why they should see it. Excellent point.
Okay, yeah.
And then Sean Saffron says, Princess Bride. We also have a couple of shares out here. Did anybody contribute to yours?
Yes. I'm trying to see if Scott Tyler says Princess Bride, which is one of my favorites, of course. And he follows it up and says, I know you asked for one movie, but I give you our summer interns at the office this homework and require that they make a report on their thoughts and watching. So all the personal and cultural growth, Young Frankenstein, which was actually my pick because I think it's a beautiful executed, beautiful film, black and white film, but it's also a great comedy, you know, so it fills a couple of gaps there. Not gaps, ticks a couple of boxes. I think it's a beautifully executed film. Young Frankenstein, Princess Bride, Blazing Saddles. I think, I would go with Blazing Saddles. Spaceballs. I'm sensing a Mel Brooks theme here.
Yep.
Spinal Tap, The Holy Grail, Life of Brian, and 20 more.
20 more?
The Holy Grail. Yeah, The Holy Grail, I think, is also like The Life of Brian. That's another favorite of mine.
Steve London says, I think we've done this one before. I thought so too, but we're doing it again. He said Schindler's List. My cousin John says Citizen Kane, and Lone Guy's Night says The Truman Show.
All right. And our buddy Kyle Nishioka says the first movie that comes to mind is The Man from Earth. And yes, I think this question was asked before because I think I gave the same answer. It was just framed different. And that's why I didn't remember it. Okay. Sorry.
All right, no more asking for movies.
I'll try and step away from movies from the questions. But
Or you could.
Yeah, there are so many to pick from. I know it's hard to say one, but
you could ask different movie related ones, like your favorite villain from a movie, or your favorite hero from a movie, or favorite from a movie.
Well, you can also ask the same question in the context of social significance, or technical feat kind of stuff. There's a lot of different ways to look at it.
Agreed. All right. Thank you, everybody, for that. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, so stick around. Another letter from our listener, Dave. I think it's history time. That music means it's history time.
Actually, history time was 2 minutes ago.
On this day in history, well, it's not history unless it's in the past. July 5th, 2023. This is the 186th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 179. Wasn't it just the opposite when we did the last one, 179 and 186? We've definitely turned the corner.
I don't remember, maybe.
I'm pretty sure it was. It was on this date in 1687 that Isaac Newton published the Philosophiae Naturalis Principia Mathematica. I think that's where he announced calculus.
And also on July 5th, 1865, the United States Secret Service began operation.
Do you know what they started? It wasn't like protecting the president.
It was for finance.
Counterfeit money.
Yeah, counterfeit money. That was it. Yes. Money.
I don't know why they called them the Secret Service. They weren't very secret.
Well, I remember that was the case, and I couldn't remember what it was. I thought of economy, but yeah, close enough.
It was 86 years ago today that Spam, the luncheon meat, not the email thing, it was introduced into the market by the Hormel Foods Corporation.
And also on July 5th, 1946, Michelin Bernardi modeled the first modern bikini at a swimming pool in Paris.
And SpongeBob had a home at Bikini Bottom.
Hello, nurse.
That same date in 1954, Elvis Presley recorded his first single, That's Alright Mama, at Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee.
And it was also on that date in 1954 that the BBC broadcast its first daily television news bulletin.
Tune in tomorrow for another daily television news bulletin. It was 29 years ago today that Jeff Bezos founded Amazon.
And
29 years. It was 1994. Wow.
Yeah, it was right at the
time flies.
The launch of the internet as we know it.
Well, no, the internet was not launched in 1994.
Sorry. The web.
No, okay, it was early web.
It's when websites really started. Yeah. So it was also on that date in 1996 that Dolly the sheep became the first mammal clone from an adult cell.
An adult what?
A gorilla.
That would be a scientific anomaly.
It was a slight mistake.
That same date in 2012, the Shard in London was inaugurated as the tallest building in Europe with a height of 310 meters, aka 1,020 feet.
And it was also on that date in 2016 that the Juno space probe arrived at Jupiter and begins its 20-month survey of the planet.
And Craig named his dog
Juno, after Alaska. Juno.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to American businessmen co-founded the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, P.T. Woolworth. No, Barnum. P.T. Barnum. He was born on the state in 1810.
Woolworth? All right. Scottish physicist and mathematician and engineer William John McCorn Rankin was born 203 years ago today.
Born July 5th, 1867. American astronomer A.E. Douglas.
With two S's for awesomeness. Louis Freeland Jenkins, with the American astronomer and academic, was born 135 years ago today.
I think it's Louise. He's got it.
Louise? Louis?
John Howard Northrop, American chemist and academic, Nobel Prize laureate, was born on the same date in 1891.
German-American biologist and ornithologist Ernst Mayr was born on this date in 1904.
Do you know what an ornithologist studies?
Yeah, thorns.
Birds.
Birds. It's birds.
Endel Arujá, the Estonian-Canadian physicist and academic, was born on the same date in 1911.
And French musicologist, I think that's a new one on us, critic and critic. It's also a new one in there.
I love and, it.
And physicist Paul Gilbert Langevin was born 90 years ago today.
Also turning 77 today is Dutch physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Gerard de Hooft.
Gerard de Hooft.
Gerard.
Also born on that Hooft. Same date. What's that?
That's how you say his name.
I know. It just I got a T out by itself.
It almost sounds like a coughed. Gerard de Hooft.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Also born on that same day in 1950, American singer, songwriter, and actor Huey Lewis.
You know where the actor comes from. Back to the Future.
Yeah, he's in Back to the Future. American. He's in a couple of things like that, but yeah.
Mathematician and computer science, Karen Navy was born on this date in 1953.
And last but not least, American singer, songwriter, producer Ronald D. Moore.
Songwriter and producer. Songwriter?
Would I say songwriter?
You said singer, songwriter, and producer.
Wait a minute. Where did I, how did I do that?
I don't know. Screenwriter and producer.
Screenwriter and producer Ronald D. Moore, known for Battlestar Galactica.
I'd like to hear him sing.
Space Nine and among other things, the 59 today.
The Cylons are coming. Doo, doo, doo.
It's a musical episode. Remember that one?
They've yeah. got a music. Oh, man. Now the music's playing out and we didn't even get to the birthdays yet.
How did I say singers?
I don't know. Listener birthdays this week include Peter on the 6th, four of them on the 8th, Trampas Whiteman, Mark Lee.
Wow.
Happy birthday. Alan Ralph, Craig's wife, Kim, on the 8th. Don't forget, Craig. Kevin Devon on the 10th. And Steve Tro on the 11th. Happy birthday to all of you. If it's Thanks. Your birthday this week and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best. And if it's not on the calendar, you have the chance to go over there and get it. Craig's going to put that on the screen. And I will tell you, for the listeners at home, it's chuckchat.com/birthday. How to get over there, get that on the birthday, and then we will give you a shout out at the right time of the year. Assuming we're doing
hey, I'm
a show.
I'm not going to forget my wife's birthday.
Well,
I'm not as stupid as I look.
Singer, songwriter.
Hey, you don't know what he does in his own time.
TMI there, buddy. TMI.
Good news, everyone.
Well, there is some interesting news. I don't know if I necessarily call it good news, but there's a race going on to build an operating system for generative AI.
Ooh.
And this article from VentureBeat is pretty much all around Intuit's endeavor to do that. They go through a number of different things that you would need to do, from the data layer to the, what do they have? The four different layers of this theoretical operating system. Google's trying to get on board. Microsoft's trying to get on board. Because when you think about it, all of these generative AI applications right now are using AI sort of as an augmented service. But if they could all work together through some consistent framework or operating system, then you'd get more value out of it. It kind of makes me think of what our company does for enterprise workflows by tying a bunch of data centers together, whether it's your ERP system or your CRM system or
right.
you know, point of sales, and being able to do the workflow in a way. ServiceNow is the operating system of the enterprise. And they're looking to do a similar thing with a lot of this. And it also said that there's a number of people that are taking some of the more public ones. And I almost feel like there's sort of this unspoken Linux movement, if you will, in this article as well. Not on Linux, but kind of the unspoken. Open source method of doing this.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I think in the next, well, even Microsoft's trying to, tie in the generative into, Windows 11. So, I mean, just that alone, I keep thinking in the next five years, I think we're going to look at computers a lot differently than we do today.
I will not disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Whether it's how that looks, I'm not 100%, but things like this, you know, interacting with your computer, like watching Tony Stark, you know, working with Jarvis, like you'll end up with, you know, some generative AI in there, or it's all going to be in the cloud. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but yeah, it's going to be different. I think we're going to look at our computers a lot differently in the next 5 years.
Because right now we're generally using generative AI, and granted, this has been around for a few years, but really only hit the mainstream in the last 6 to 12 months. And we're using them as kind of augment services, where you say, "Hey, I'd like you to start a letter for me," or "I want you to create an image in the style of." So there's room to grow. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And if you think about, you know, what we had for the internet 30 years ago and how quickly that matured.
This is
or mobile. You know how quickly mobile took off.
Well, if you think from
mobile computing, I should say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mobile computing. Well, it was ridiculous how fast that went off. But you think from 95 to 2000, just that short 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how the internet changed gears. And then you had, like you said, Amazon. Then you had Google, and you had search engines and things that help you find stuff. I'm not saying it was great, you know, because by today's standards, it probably wasn't, but it's changed a lot. And then, of course, over time. So I'm just saying now I'm starting to see a trend where I think our computer is going to look a lot different in the next 5 years.
I think it's time I step back, because it's just going to generate all the content for me.
Hey, have you used ChatGPT or Bard or something like that? On anything?
Nope. Some of my colleagues have, my coworkers have.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not.
The only thing I've really done is I typed out an email and I thought, well, I wanted something to help me wordsmith it a little bit. So all I did was I popped it in there and said, make this more cooperative sounding.
Mm-hmm.
And I put in quotes and I put my email in there. It actually did pretty good. I had to go change a couple of things myself, and I got a good response from the email. So I was like, I've only used it a couple of times like that. I don't use it a whole lot. I figured I should be able to do this rather than relying on a service, because, you know, services can go away.
Yep.
You know, so just saying.
All right. Quick shout out to the chat room. We got Mike Robison. Our digital overlords are smiling, he says.
That's right. You know it.
We have Mike. We have Scott. We have a few others out there. Thank you very much for watching. We do the show on Sundays at 8:30 Eastern. I almost said the wrong time. 8:30 Eastern time.
July
We'd love
1st.
To have you join us. No, we're recording this on the 2nd. It's going out on audio podcast on the 5th, but you can find it on video like immediately. So yep. Love to see you there. We'd love to see you live. Hang around with us in the chat room. Share a few laughs. Get your comments up there. Poke fun at the way we pronounce names, whatever it takes. We'll see you there.
Yeah, I like how you said we.
Royal we.
Thanks.
Yeah. We as in O-U-I, French for yes. Yes, let's move on with the Remember When segment.
Oui. Thank you.
We have a bunch of nostalgic photos, and we're not trying to turn this into a photo podcast, but gentleman by the name of Frank, what was his name? Frank Burnick, Bobot. Not, it must rhyme with robot. But he went.
He has like Bohobot or something.
B-O-H-B-O-T.
Bobot.
Bobot. Rhymes with robot. He's gone through and made a photo collection, something like a book of 150 different photos of arcades. Theoretically from the golden age of arcades. Interesting read through this article. I was reading it. He said, you know, there is a resurgence in arcades, nothing close to what we had in the heyday. Goes through a bit of industry about, did you know at one time pinball machines were outlawed?
Depends on where you're at, but yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was said it wasn't a game of chance.
It could have been gambling. He said, so arcades or penny arcades, whatever, were started in the early 1900s with like strength machines. And then pinball machines came in around the 1930s. But in 1939, LA officials outlawed the devices and proceeded to confiscate and destroy them. 3 years later, New York City Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia, for whom the airport is named after, implemented a series of prohibition-style raids on illegal pinball parlors. Open up, it's the feds. Oh, they're here for our booze. Never mind the booze. We want your pinball games.
Right.
And those were in effect until 1976. California's was overturned in 1974. Pretty nuts. But then electronic games started coming in. Remember good old Space Command or Computer Space? That's what it was.
Computer Space?
Yep, that was the first combat-style video game, an electronic one. And then they termed the heyday was when Space Invaders, Asteroids, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong.
Computer Space one is the one that we saw at the Computer History Museum.
Yes, and it had funky that picture with the lady dressed up in an evening dress. Yes.
Which I said, you'll never see that in an arcade.
Nope.
Well, my dreams.
They called the heyday from 78 to 81.
Mm-hmm.
Those are prime teenage years for me.
Yeah, ooh, absolutely.
And then they said at one time there was an estimated 1.5 million arcade machines, 24,000 full arcades, and 400,000 street locations, according to a 1982 study by the now-defunct trade magazine Playmeter. And that's significantly gone down. But we're starting to see a rise in that again. The interesting thing about this is he went around from arcade to arcade. He said everyone kind of had a different vibe. There were some that were in a bar that had sort of that weekend feel. There were some that were more secluded and dedicated, and it felt like this was an underground thing that you're really not supposed to do. It was an interesting read through this article.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. There's one picture. I don't know if you saw it, or are you showing any? No.
No.
One picture that I can relate to is, let's see, it's like
the lady standing at the Ms. Pac-Man machine going, three. What happened? Yeah. She's got her hands thrown up like, I didn't do that.
Now, about the third big picture down, there's a slideshow in there, but the third big picture down,
yes,
there's a scene where you can look, the doors are open, and it's like a big door, and you can see outside and see the beach.
Yes.
And you can see the video game. This is exactly the way Myrtle Beach used to be.
And oh, really? Okay.
Whenever we went on vacation to Myrtle Beach, which is 3 hours from my house,
mm-hmm.
I would go around and hit all the little arcade places. And especially on the main drag, which was Ocean Boulevard, they had some places like this. One where it was wide open and you could play, you get a little bit of the misty air coming in, the sea air coming in. But the games have been there forever. And I would say in the last 20 within about 20 years is when they kind of tore down some of those old arcades, but yeah, so that was there for a long time.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Hey, one summer I went there with a broken foot. I had a broken ankle.
Yes.
So I had a cast on, and I still got out on crutches and went looking for all these stupid arcades.
That's dedication.
You know it.
How much money do you think you spent at arcades?
Probably enough to get me through a college education.
You think it was in the tens of thousands of dollars?
Okay, seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
I have to think about it. How do you quantify that?
Well, think about how long you would go, how long a game would last. So how much would you spend in an average session? You know, I don't think it was uncommon for some kids to spend $20. In an afternoon.
Yeah, it wasn't like I had $20 and I went out. It was like I may have had some quarters at one point, maybe a few dollars at another point, you know, just and depending on what it was.
Just kind of estimate in you know, how many times a week did you go out, and then over how many years?
Well, I could tell you it used to be right down from my house was this grocery store. It was a Winn-Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
And in front was a Tron machine and a Miss Pac-Man. Anytime I found a quarter, it would go in that Tron machine. So I'm trying to think. That's a good question. I don't know if I have to really think about that.
I would give a rough estimate. I probably spent a few hundred, you know, maybe between $500 and $1,000 over the course of several years.
Really? I thought that was kind of lowballing, but okay.
I was not a serious gamer. I only did it recreationally, man.
Right. Well, and when I was younger, there was the mall that lived near me. The mall that was near me, it's probably like 3 miles. You know, I could easily ride my bike there. I'd go there all the time and hit Aladdin's Castle. And, you know, if I had 20 bucks, it would, you know, I could tell you it was going to be gone. So I don't know. It's hard to say. $1,000, I think that's lowballing it for me. Way lowballing it.
Okay. So a dollar is four quarters. $100 would be 400 quarters. $1,000 would be 4,000 quarters. Do you think you spent more than 4,000 quarters?
Sure. I bet I have.
Okay.
I would not.
You want the, that out you of want the definition of a conflicted teen brain when I was a kid? It was playing a video game and then a cute girl walks up and stands right next to you and watches you play. That wasn't distracting, now was it?
well, at the time, it wasn't a girl friend. It was a girl friend. And she played the Miss Pac-Man. So we got to know each other just by playing. She's playing that Miss Pac-Man beside the Tron I played. But yeah, it's like looking at that computer space game you were talking about. There was no woman walking around. There was no, you know, women hanging around the arcades.
There were arcade games at the roller rink, and there were girls at the roller rink, and oftentimes it was distracting. Just leave it at that.
Gosh, now you got me thinking. How much did I have no idea. I mean, what time frame were we talking like?
I know.
78 through.
Anytime you were at the arcade game. You know, when did you play arcade games? When did you pay for arcade games? You started.
All the time. That was a lifestyle. What are you talking about? when we lived in Texas, there was a convenience store near me. And beside that was an arcade.
Craig, I don't need a Google Maps of everywhere you.
I'm thinking. I'm trying to think of all quantify. I mean, they have a lot of pinballs I would play. Then they got like asteroids and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying to think about all the money.
I always justified it as there's worse things I could be spending my money on. I'm not smoking.
Oh yeah, I never. Yeah, no.
And I watched a lot of other people play as well. It was sort of a play for a while, then watch somebody who's really good at it. My buddy Mark spent way more than I did, but he could also make a quarter last a lot longer than I did. So maybe it kind of rationalized itself.
Maybe that's why I played Tron so well, because I was like, I got to make this thing last. You know, oh God, now you got me thinking. I don't know. I don't know. It was a lot of money. Let's put it that way.
Alrighty. Fun article. If you want to go back and look. It's a bit of a time machine. You may see games you played. You may see games that looked interesting. They're still out there. They're still out there. There's one in Atlanta when we go to Dragon Con. One not far from Gibney's that we tend to stop in once in a while. I always find it funny.
About my friend that's got the barcade here in town. He's got machines and a bar. It's all one, which is really cool. A lot of places are doing that now.
I always surprise myself, and I probably shouldn't after all these years. Is if I walk up to a cabinet style arcade game and you get that stance, you know, everybody had their own like way you stood at those arcades.
Like you're leaning on one leg kind of thing.
Some people had the one leg. Some people were saying a two leg. Mine was left foot up against the bottom of the case and right foot back. I was like ready to run or something. I don't know what it was.
You got me thinking there was this one time, I forget what I was waiting to play. But there was this kid was playing, and you know how you would line the quarters up on the glass?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I remember I did that, and I remember the machine had just a little bit of gap, and it opened up enough, and it went, shoop, all the quarters went down. All of them. Not just mine, but it was like four or five quarters went.
I was like, that's how they make their money. Skip the coin box.
I think he was playing, and he pulled up on the console just a little bit, and it was just enough for them all to go.
Or somebody comes up and bangs the glass and they'll fall.
we had a really cool, oh man, you got me thinking now. There was this place, I forget the name of it now, but there was a place here in town that they even had smoke on the floor. It was, you walk in the building and they had games all around and they had a kind of a textured floor, kind of like, almost like a computer room. They had games lined around all the sides, and it seemed a lot bigger on the inside, but it was not, you know. But yeah, it was really not Game Station. But yeah, I went there several times. That was fantastic.
All right, Craig, we need to pull you back into 2023.
I spent way too much money, Chuck.
We have now. Think if you had saved that money, what you could be doing with it today.
What if I invested it in Apple?
Apple stock. Yes, because Apple this week just passed the $3 trillion mark as a company. Interesting. Wow. High evaluation on this. And there, you found an article from Business Insider that kind of has this light history of Apple from the day they were founded by Wozniak and Jobs back in April 1st, 1976. And you can look at all the funny pictures of their clothing and hairstyles and whatnot in the 70s, going through the various CEOs of Scully. I like this poor guy, Ronald Wayne. Wayne ended up leaving the company. He was like an early founder. Wait. He got a check for $800 for his shares of the company.
Yeah, he was an early founder just like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
Yep.
He could have been just as well off as they are.
Actually, Woz sold a whole bunch of his in the 80s. He sold off a majority of his stock in 85, shortly after Jobs was evicted.
Yeah. Yep.
So a lot of fun looking at the old computers. There's some 2Es, there's some 2Cs. They have Xerox PARC, the Apple III, the Lisa, the Mac.
Hey, you know, I always had a soft spot in my heart for Apple because there's things about Windows I like, but there's a lot of things I like about Apple. And one, it's an American computer company. It's hard to, you know, just diss them because they've made their way and made a big mark, but they really pushed things forward and expanded the envelope. It's hard to not say that.
They, you know, they made some missteps along the way, but they learned from them. You know, I think it's a real great comeback story because they were almost in the dumpster. In fact, Michael Dell said, if I owned Apple in, what was it, 92, 93, he said, I would have given the shareholders back their money and closed the doors.
There should have been a time that should have happened, but it kept on.
Yep. It did. So fun story about that. If you want to go back there, look for the show notes over at chuckchat.com/technorama for episode 716.
Hey, and speaking of pushing the envelope, I know we're running long, but I'm going to say this. It was kind of a flop, but that Newton message pad.
Oh, even the Simpsons poked fun at it.
Look at it. It was predating Palm.
All the PDAs. Yeah, it ushered in the PDA
and your phone era. You hold your phone up to that picture, it looks like your phone.
It was a lot bigger than the phone.
I know.
It was like half the size of an iPad.
It's not that far off, though. I'm just saying that they were pushing the envelope.
Right. That one was from the mind of John Scully. So innovative, but not the right time and poorly implemented technology. So let's move on to the patrons because we got to get the show moving.
All right.
Thank you to our patrons. We want to congratulate you and thank you for your generous donations. Craig's going to put the link up there so you know how to join if you're watching the video. These are the people that generously give at least $1 for every show that we produce. Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris Martinez, Chris MC, Dan Deman Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, John Noble, Yorgos Rowan, Crazy Joe Adventures, Kyle Nishioka, and Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, and Brad Miller, who's just here last week, Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Cody, Steve Therian, Steve Webb, Steve London, and the other Tim Cook, our Tim Cook, is out there.
That's right. The other Tim Cook.
He didn't give us any Apple shares. It's nice of him to give us $1 out of his $1 trillion that he's got.
Yeah. I just want 80,000 of them. Can I, please?
Just every week he could give us an Apple stock.
Right.
It's only $194 a share. That would be a generous donation.
Yeah, come on.
If you want to become one of these generous patrons, whether you have $1 trillion or not in your back pocket, just burning a hole, you can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Get your name read out on the show and listen to our after show. Because right after this, Craig and I sit back in the big old virtual leather chairs and chat about what's on our mind for the week. We'll find something. Thank you, everybody, for that. Let's fade out that music and bring in, where are we? Pass me the remote. Craig saw a new movie. Go for
it. I did. Can we go for it?
Sure.
All right. So I saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny this weekend, which I...
That sounds like a telethon.
Yeah. If I don't, I figured if I don't go see it this weekend, I'm going to end up getting spoiled on it because everybody's going to be talking about it the next week or two.
Sure.
So I took Harrison. We both saw it. Harrison is a great judge of movies. Sometimes I'm like, he's right. But I got to tell you, we both enjoyed Dial of Destiny. It was really good. One of the things I was worried about was in the trailers. There's they kind of show a couple of scenes from the beginning of the movie where he's de-aged, you know, where they kind of did that de-aging thing.
Yes.
For Harrison Ford. And it was fine. I was worried it was going to break the movie a little bit, mm-hmm. but no, it worked. It worked really well. The only thing that I thought was a little funny was Harrison Ford, did the voice for his character when he was de-aged. And as an older man,
oh,
he's got a little bit more gravel.
Right.
But it didn't distract it too much. So I thought it did a good job with it.
Come all on, the characters Chewy. Were
fun.
Let's
stupid Nazi.
Now, don't get cocky, kid.
Yeah. But I thought they did a really good job with the movie. Enjoyed it. I thought it was just fine. I wouldn't say it's a perfect movie, but it didn't have to be. It was just a fun romp.
So. Did they play the music? Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this is John Williams' last movie. So, yes, he did the score for this. And, yeah, of course, you hear echoes of that theme throughout the whole movie. And in certain parts, it gets elevated. And, yes, it's fantastic.
Cool.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
There you
have
it.
Great movie. I can totally recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
Good, good. And Gary Lindros met Harrison Ford in the theater. Did you see his picture on Facebook?
What?
He was, yeah, but I thought Harrison Ford was a lot taller. This guy was kind of short.
No.
There was a couple of cosplayers as Indiana Jones and Marion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Donna and I have started watching Black Mirror season 6. I believe we watched three of the 5 episodes so far. Good stuff. The third one was a little slow. Some of them start out like, yeah.
Third episode?
Yeah, the third episode. The second one even started out a little slow, but then you're like, there it is. There's the turning point. Third one was almost like a little predictable, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Confusing at first, like some of them are. Like, whoa, what did we just... We went from here to there. And third one though does have a familiar face in it. If you've watched Breaking Bad, so Jesse Pinkman is in it.
Oh, Aaron Paul.
Yep. Yeah. So he did a good job. He didn't talk like Jesse Pinkman. Thank goodness.
No.
Hey, yo, you gonna fix that or what?
Yeah, he's actually more talented than you'd think.
Oh yeah,
from
yeah.
Just seeing him on Breaking Bad,
and he put it all out there on this one. So Black Mirror season 6, good stuff. If you've been watching it, continue to watch. I haven't seen anything that's like episode 1, season 1 with the pig. Not that hasn't come back. I think they learned their lesson on that one. The other one I watched was a 4-part series on Hulu/History Channel called The Men Who Built America, Frontiersmen. We started this series. I watched the first episode, which is all about Daniel Boone. The frontiersmen and how he blazed into the Kentucky territory. I love this old history stuff because at the same time we were going through the Declaration of Independence, the American Revolution, he was pushing west into Indian territory and they were none too happy about it because you're on our land. Yeah. And what I didn't realize was the crown said, no, 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 no. You colonists cannot go past the Appalachian Mountains. We're not going to. So they were able to forge an alliance with the Indians, said, we don't want them here. You don't want them here. Why don't we give you guns and you can attack Boonesboro? You
know, the enemy of my enemy is your,
it was like so you could see it was thinly veiled like that, but, I liked it. They're also going to be covering, Davy Crockett. Tecumseh makes an appearance right at the end of episode 1. So not just, you know, the white guys in this movie, but there's also some Native Americans who they spotlight as well. So I'm hoping to see the rest of this as you know, an ongoing series. Very good stuff. And pretty darn true to history, because they've got all these people from universities and whatnot who step in and, you know, do that narration kind of thing. You know, this is when Daniel Boone, guy from ASU or whatever, now he's writing more down. Craig just remembered what else he's been watching.
Yeah, sorry. There's two more.
Do another one.
All right. So Harrison and I just started watching Secret Wars, which is on Disney Plus. It follows the comic about the Skrulls. The Skrulls are an alien race that can transform themselves to look like really anything.
Okay.
You know, any character. So that just started, and it's got Samuel Jackson in it. And so far I'm enjoying it, but I'm like, it's only six episodes. So I imagine the third one, they need to start really picking it up and giving us some more stuff. So, but it, that's not to say that it's not good. I'm enjoying it so far.
And the third one that I got is actually on YouTube. I don't know how this channel started coming up in my alerts. It's called Dark Docs. Got my attention with a clip, and they're pretty short, like 10, 12 minutes. Historical documentaries. The ones that I've seen so far are around World War II, but I know there's more in there because they've been doing this for a while. They had one on the atomic bombs that weren't dropped. So we're all familiar with Fat Man and Little Boy on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They weren't sure that was going to force an unconditional surrender. So they had an assembly line. They had plans like every month or so, let's drop another one. Let's drop another one. And there were something a pipeline of about 10 of these in various stages of assembly. And the way I recall, they were hours away from dropping a third one. I don't remember if it was Tokyo or Kobe, or I can't remember the city they selected. But fortunately, the Japanese did go, we'll give you that unconditional surrender. Originally, they wanted to do conditional surrender, where they said, the emperor is still in charge, right? And we said, no, that's not good enough. So
it's not going to work.
Yeah. So you know, there was another one about the plane that they should not have had. They commandeered at the end of World War II. They came in possession. The Americans came in possession of the ME-232, the Messerschmitt first jet fighter engine. Not just the engine, but the whole plane. So they grabbed a few of these. Some of them were in disrepair. They also grabbed the mechanics and some of the pilots too. So they knew how to fix them up and get them flying. And that helped kickstart our own jet program.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, I think, I don't know all of the particulars about this, but there was a picture, that my dad has, and it's of a plane that my grandfather flew, or he didn't fly, rather. He was more of a, technical tech guy. But he was on the plane, and I took that photo. I scanned it in, and I did a Google search. I was trying to see if somebody else had the same picture, or maybe it was, you know, I find some more detail. And it turns out the person that took that picture was one of his friends that was serving in another plane, that just like it, you know, right beside it. These planes were support for the Enola Gay.
Oh, cool.
I was like, are you kidding me? Because he said, here's the one I found online. It says, my plane photographed over the Pacific Ocean near the International Dateline. Notice the boat in the bottom. And there is a boat you can see barely see in the water. But yeah, I was like, wow, I found that online. I didn't find that inscription on my grandfather's picture. But yeah, it's kind of amazing.
I think I misspoke. Scott corrected me. It's the ME-262. I think I said 232. Got it mixed up with RS-232.
Right. So, anyway, I just thought it was really cool that my grandfather.
That is neat. A little touchstone to history. All right, you got one more real quick?
Yeah, this is something Kim watched, and I can't really speak to the whole thing because I didn't watch it myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allowed. And it was a documentary about Rock Hudson's life. And it all, of course, bled over into in the 80s when he was he came out and said he was a gay man and he had AIDS and the whole thing came out about that. And that was actually pretty interesting. I saw the tail end of that and it seemed interesting. So I go look for that. I think it's on several different places. I saw Hulu, Amazon Prime, Max. So it just recently came out.
All right, good stuff. Thank you. Thank you. A couple things in the geek library for us. That intro is longer than the things we got to talk about here.
Yeah, right.
From Earth.com, we've got beautiful pictures and imagery from the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST, of Saturn. And it looks like the rings are lit up and the planet turned the lights out.
It looks really cool, doesn't it?
It's in the infrared spectrum, which is why it doesn't have the standard bands across the planet, you know, for the at different latitudes. But yeah, it looks like this would make a cool model in your room at night if you could pull this off. Like, how do I light up the rings?
Yeah, it almost looks like you turn on a black light and the rings lit up or something.
Or brown light or whatever. And three of the moons are in the picture, which is also kind of cool.
Yep.
So go check it out over at the show notes for episode 716. We get those up as soon as we get the show out right away. One other one that we've got is this must be the rarest Magic the Gathering card ever. There's only one. It's the One Ring from Lord of the Rings, and it's written in Elvish or Dark Sauron, whatever they call that. And somebody said, I'll give you $500,000 for it, because I don't know who was looking for it, who found it. It wasn't real clear on this, but NFL football player Cassius Marsh offered $500,000 for the card. Before Dave and Adam's Card World doubled the offer to $1 million. Both of those were blown out of the water by a Spain-based card store offering $2.2 million.
Those are big jumps in bids.
They really want this card. Now, so far, the highest rated collectible card of all time is Mickey Mantle's baseball card. I don't know if it's his rookie card or whatever it was, at $12.6 million, according to Forbes. So this
is
coming up.
How do you afford that kind of stuff, man?
It's an investment. It's an investment. How do you afford art?
I'm going to pull the trigger, and you have like $12.6 million extra sitting around.
Well, if you could invest $2.2 million, and in a few years it turns into $12.6 million, yeah, I'd do that.
Sure. No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just like, hard to imagine going, I got $12.6 million sitting around.
Might have to sell the house, but I'm sure I could scratch together $2.2 million.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we'd be living on the street, but I've got my card.
That's right. That's right.
So that takes us to the end of the show. Our question of the week for you as we step out the door is, if it came out that we were 100% living in a simulation. If it came out that we were 100% living in a simulation, what would be the biggest indicator looking back?
Probably that black cat I kept walking past.
A number of times.
Yeah, a number of times.
Every night, right. That same cat goes through our backyard. It's really bizarre.
Deja vu, man. Yeah.
Vuja day, the feeling that none of this has ever happened before. There actually is another word for that. I don't remember what it was. I read it this last week. I went, oh, that's what George Carlin was talking about when he said Vuja day.
Vuja day. That's right.
All righty. We want to hear your answer. We'll put that on the internet, social media on Saturday. So stick around for us there. Okie doke. We're going to sign us out. Play the music. Here comes. There it is. I almost hit another key by mistake. That would have been embarrassing, but not unusual. So thank you very much, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach out to us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. Quick, Craig, what was the old number?
The old number? Oh, God.
206-222-CHAT.
But don't give that one out.
No, don't use that. That's long gone. You probably get some screen door company or something. The new one is 707.
By the way, Scott Tyler says he keeps getting the blue pills.
I almost went to the purple pill thing, but no. No, the purple pills are Nexium. The blue pills are you know what. Okay, never mind.
That's right.
Give us a binary high five. We're going to end on that note.
All right. 101. Thanks for listening.